Welcome to Base by Base. You know, we often talk about our health, maybe based on family history or what our doctor tells us after a checkup. But what if you could get a much, much deeper look, like a prediction of your personal risk for complex diseases, things like breast cancer or type 2 diabetes, based not just on a few clues, but on the intricate details of your entire unique genetic code? What if we could understand how even the rarest parts of your DNA, the parts we used to ignore, actually influence your health? That's the big question we're tackling today. How close are we to that kind of truly personalized prediction?
It's a fascinating question, and one that's right at the heart of precision medicine. We're looking for ways to move beyond broad statistics and understand individual susceptibility. And actually, there's some really exciting progress being made.
Okay, so you're saying there's new research shedding light on this.
Exactly. To help answer this, a team led by Wanwen Zheng, Wing-Hung Wong, and their colleagues published a landmark study in PNAS just recently. Their work introduces a really novel approach to predicting disease risk from our genes.
A landmark study. Okay.
Yeah.
So what was their main goal? What problem were they trying to solve?
Well, the central challenge they tackled is that our current methods for predicting genetic risk, while useful, have some pretty significant blind spots. They set out to create a framework that could overcome these limitations, aiming for much more accurate and comprehensive risk predictions, especially for complex diseases. Their hypothesis, essentially, was that by incorporating more complex biological information derived from the DNA sequence, they could build better predictive models.
Right. So before we dive into their solution, let's quickly set the stage with the existing tools. We often hear about polygenic risk scores, PRS. What are they? And what are these blind spots you mentioned?
Sure. So a polygenic risk score, or PRS, is basically a way to estimate your inherited risk for a specific disease. It works by adding up the small effects of many, many common genetic variations across your genome. Think of it like a total score based on lots of tiny genetic contributors.
Okay, so it aggregates lots of common signals. That sounds powerful, and it is used quite a bit already, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. PRS has been a big step forward for identifying people who might be at higher risk, potentially guiding screening or prevention strategies. But, and this is the key point, the new research addresses traditional PRS methods have limitations.
Ah, the catch. What are they?
Well, there are three main ones. First, they mostly focus on common genetic variants, the ones found frequently in the population. But with whole genome sequencing, WGS, becoming more common, we can now see everything, including rare variants, even brand new mutations, and also understand the vast non-coding parts of our DNA. Traditional PRS often misses the impact of these.
So it's like only looking at the most popular words in a book and missing the rest of the vocabulary.
That's a great analogy, yeah. Second, they usually rely on simple linear models. They assume each variant adds a little bit of risk and you just sum it up. Mm-hmm. But biology is rarely that simple, right? There can be complex nonlinear interactions between genes that these models just don't capture well.
Okay, so linearity is an issue. What's the third limitation?
This was really interesting, the regulatory context. Many genetic variants don't actually change proteins directly. Instead, they affect regulatory elements. Think of them as dimmer switches or volume controls for genes, like enhancers and promoters. These control when and how much a gene is turned on or off in different cells. Most PRS methods either ignore this crucial regulatory information or handle it very simply.
Wow. Okay. So missing rare variants, ignoring complex interactions, and overlooking the regulatory control switches. That sounds like a lot of missing information.
It really is. And that's exactly what Zheng, Wong, and their team aim to fix.
So how did they do it? What's their novel approach?
They developed a new framework they call EpiPRS. The EPI stands for epigenomic.
Epigenomic, so relating to those regulatory controls.
Precisely. Their central idea, and this is really innovative, is to use genomic large language models, LLMs. Yes, like the AI behind ChatGPT, but these are trained specifically on vast amounts of biological data, on DNA sequences.
Wait, seriously, an LLM for DNA? That's kind of mind-blowing. How does that even work? Can you give us an analogy?
Absolutely. Think of the genomic LLM they use, one called Informer, as a highly sophisticated translator, or maybe even an interpreter. It reads a long string of DNA, the A's, T's, C's, and G's, but instead of translating it into, say, French, It translates it into predictions about what that DNA sequence is doing biologically.
Doing? Like what kind of things?
Like predicting how active a gene is likely to be in a specific cell type, or how accessible that region of DNA is for the cell's machinery to read it, or where certain chemical tags called histone modifications are placed. These predictions about epigenomic signals, the gene activity, the accessibility, become what the researchers call informative intermediates.
Informative intermediates, meaning they bridge the gap between the raw DNA sequence and the actual biological outcome.
Exactly. They capture the functional meaning of the DNA sequence in a biological context. It's like understanding not just the letters, but the grammar and the punctuation and how they create meaning.
That makes a lot more sense. So EpiPRS isn't just counting variants. It's trying to understand their functional impact through these LLM predictions.
You've got it. And this approach lets EpiPRS tackle those limitations we talked about. It naturally incorporates potential nonlinear relationships because it's using these complex predicted biological features. It can account for rare variant effects because the LLM interprets the potential impact of any variant, common or rare, on those predicted features. And crucially, that regulatory information isn't an afterthought. It's baked into the core of the model via the predicted epigenomic signals.
Okay, that sounds conceptually powerful.
Yeah.
How does it work in practice? What are the steps involved in calculating an EpiPRS score for someone?
It's a multi-stage process. First, they need good quality whole genome sequencing data for an individual. From that, they perform personal genome construction. This means they reconstruct both the chromosome inherited from the mother and the one from the father separately. That's important because we have two copies and their combined effect matters.
Right. Deployed genomes. Makes sense. What's next?
Second is the epigenomic feature extraction. This is where the genomic LLM, informer in this case, comes in. It reads those reconstructed maternal and paternal DNA sequences and generates thousands of these predicted epigenomic features, like predicted gene expression, chromatin accessibility, histone marks across many different cell types and tissues. It creates this incredibly rich functional profile linked to your specific DNA.
Wow, okay. A huge amount of data generated just from the sequence. And the final step?
The final step is disease risk prediction. All those predicted epigenomic features are fed as input into a sophisticated nonlinear machine learning model. They use something called gradient boosting regression trees, or GBRT. This model learns the complex patterns and combinations of these epigenomic features that are associated with a higher or lower risk for the specific disease they're studying. It moves way beyond simple addition.
Okay. Quite a complex pipeline. So they built this impressive EpiPRS framework. How did they actually test if it works better than the old methods? You can't just unleash it on patients straight away.
No, absolutely not. Rigorous testing is key. They started with extensive simulation studies. This is standard practice for validating complex models like this. They even developed their own simulation tool called RegPhino, which is pretty neat. It allowed them to create artificial data sets where they knew the ground truth. They could precisely control how much disease risk came from common variants, rare variants, direct genetic effects, those regulatory epigenetic effects, environmental factors, even complex interactions.
Ah, so they could create different scenarios, different types of genetic architectures for diseases, and see how EpiPRS performed compared to others.
Exactly. They compared EpiPRS against several established methods, like LDPRD2 and PRSCS, which are common linear PRS tools, and also against other nonlinear methods that use genotype data directly, but without the LLM predicted epigenomic layer.
Okay, let the games begin. What did the simulations show? What stood out to you?
Well, there were three really striking findings that strongly supported their approach. First, the power of nonlinearity. In simulations where disease risk involved complex interactions between variants, exactly the kind of thing linear models miss the nonlinear models, especially EpiPRS, were significantly better predictors.
Significantly better? Like, by how much?
The advantage really kicked in when they simulated larger training data sets, say, over 2,000 individuals. With more data, the nonlinear models just kept improving, uncovering those complex patterns. In contrast, for very small data sets, the simpler linear models were sometimes more reliable, likely because the complex models can overfit with too little data. But the potential with enough data was clear.
Okay, so nonlinearity matters, and big data helps unlock it. What was the second key finding?
The second was about that regulatory insight. When they simulated diseases where those regulatory epigenetic mechanisms played a bigger role in causing the disease.
The dimmer switches and volume controls.
Exactly. When those were important in the simulation, EpiPRS showed a dramatic improvement in accuracy. Its performance scaled up as the importance of regulatory effects increased. The traditional methods, however, didn't get that same boost. It really highlighted EpiPRS's unique ability to extract and use that meaningful regulatory information predicted by the LLM.
That's compelling. It's actually learning from the predicted biological function. And the third finding.
This one might be the most impactful. Rare variant leverage. They simulated scenarios where rare genetic variants contributed significantly to disease risk. EpiPRS showed up to a 20% higher AUC, that's a measure of predictive accuracy, compared to the traditional methods in these rare variant-driven scenarios.
Wow, 20% is a huge difference in prediction.
It is. And what's more, the performance of the traditional methods actually decreased as rare variants became more important in the simulation. They struggled with them. But EpiPRS maintained its predictive strength. This suggests it's much better equipped to handle the full spectrum of genetic variation, including those rare but potentially high-impact mutations.
Okay, those simulation results sound incredibly promising. EpiPRS seems to capture complexity, regulatory effects, and rare variants much better. But simulations are one thing. How did it do on real-world human data?
Right, that's the crucial test. They applied EpiPRS to real data from a very large study, the UK Biobank. They focused on two well-known complex diseases, breast cancer and type 2 diabetes.
Okay, UK Biobank, huge data set, real people. What were the results for breast cancer?
For breast cancer, they used data from over 10,000 women, cases and controls. Now, instead of using the whole genome initially, they focused EpiPRS on just five specific regions known as LD blocks that are known to contain strong genetic signals for breast cancer risk. Even using just these five regions, EpiPRS significantly outperformed the standard methods. They use a metric called lambda, which measures the proportional gain in predictive accuracy over a baseline. EpiPRS achieved a lambda of almost 0.4.
0.4. How does that compare?
Well, other state-of-the-art PRS methods, even when using information from the entire genome, had lambda values ranging from about 0.09 up to only 0.28. So EpiPRS got substantially better prediction using less genetic information initially, just by focusing on the right spots and using its sophisticated approach. That suggests real power and efficiency.
That is impressive. More accuracy from less data focused in the right places. What about type 2 diabetes, another major health issue?
Similar story, perhaps even stronger. For type 2 diabetes, they used data from about 20,000 people. This time, they combined information from 11 relevant LD blocks using EpiPRS. Here, they achieved a lambda value of 0.515. Again, this significantly outperformed the whole genome baseline methods, whose lambda values topped out around 0.32. Consistently, the nonlinear approach using those LLM-derived epigenomic features provided a substantial boost in predictive performance for these complex diseases.
Okay, so it works well on real data for two major diseases, but real-world data can be messy. Did they check if the model is robust? Like, could it be thrown off by differences between populations? We're just picking up noise.
Great question. Yes, they did test for robustness.
Yeah.
They trained the model on individuals from England and Wales and then tested it on a separate group from Scotland. The performance held up very well, suggesting the model is generalizable and not overly sensitive to subtle population differences, which is a common challenge. They also did control analyses, applying it to genomic regions not expected to be associated with the diseases. In those cases, EpiPRS performed essentially randomly, which is good. It means it's not just finding spurious signals everywhere, it's identifying real associations where they exist.
That's reassuring. It seems robust and specific. So, stepping back, what does this mean for the bigger picture? Does EpiPRS just give us a better risk score, or does it also help us understand the biology of the disease better? Can we peek inside the model?
That's a critical aspect, interpretability. Is it just a black box, or can we learn something? And the answer seems to be, yes, we can learn. They analyzed which of the predicted epigenomic features were most important for the model's predictions. For type 2 diabetes, for example, the most informative features came from predictions related to biologically relevant tissues, specifically the pancreas and the liver, which are key players in glucose control.
Ah, so the model automatically focused on the right tissues.
Exactly. And furthermore, they looked at which specific genomic regions the model relied on most heavily within those tissues. They found a strong overlap between these high-importance regions and known active regulatory elements like enhancers and promoters that are functional in pancreas and liver cells.
So it's not only using features from the right tissues, but it's zooming in on the actual regulatory control elements within those tissues that we know are important. It's like it's rediscovering known biology, which increases confidence that it's capturing something real.
Precisely. It suggests EpiPRS isn't just making accurate predictions. It's doing so, at least in part, by leveraging biologically meaningful signals related to gene regulation in disease-relevant contexts. That moves us closer to understanding why certain genetic profiles increase risk.
That is a huge step. Understanding the why is key to developing better treatments, not just predictions. So what's next for EpiPRS? Are there limitations still or future directions they mentioned?
Yeah, like any groundbreaking work, it opens up new questions and areas for improvement. The authors themselves point out a few things. They want to find better ways to explicitly incorporate potential confounders, things like environmental exposures or lifestyle factors, directly into the models, which might improve accuracy further. They also suggest exploring whether combining the predicted epigenomic features with the direct genotype information might perform even better, sort of getting the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. Combining different types of information.
Right. And investigating other genomic LLMs, two newer ones, might be even more efficient or provide higher resolution predictions. Ultimately, the big goal is to push towards even more interpretable models. Can we use this framework not just to predict risk, but to pinpoint the specific causal genetic variants and the specific epigenomic changes driving that risk? That's the holy grail, really understanding the precise mechanism.
Moving from prediction to true causal understanding.
Exactly. But what this study clearly demonstrates is a significant leap forward. It shows how integrating the power of these genomic LLMs to understand the functional, regulatory landscape of our genome can dramatically improve our ability to predict risk for complex diseases. It brings into focus the importance of rare variants and those often ignored regulatory regions. EpiPRS offers a powerful new tool to get closer to that future of truly personalized risk assessment and hopefully personalized medicine.
It really paints a picture of the future, doesn't it? Imagine having your genome sequenced, and instead just getting a list of common variants, you get this deep, functional analysis predicting how your unique genetic makeup influences gene activity across your body, giving you a much clearer picture of your personal health risks. It's a shift from broad categories to incredibly specific individual insights. This deep dive into EpiPRS definitely shows how quickly this field is moving and gives us a lot to think about for the future of precision health.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description.
If you found this analysis valuable, the best way to support Base by Base is to hit follow on Spotify and leave a 5-star rating. It takes only a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.